This hour of First Up, powered by Manscaped. It is First Up for your Friday morning. Welcome in or welcome back, and thank you for being with us. Whether you're listening live on your radio, TSN1050.ca, or on the iHeart Radio Canada app, it's Aaron Korolnik and Carlo Koliakovo with you, the general manager of the Toronto Raptors, Bobby Webster. He will join us in 30 minutes. We'll look back on the team's selection of Christian Koloko from the University of Arizona and look ahead to the offseason. The Raps have a number of moves to make. And the general manager of basketball at TSN is our next guest. He is Jack Armstrong, and he's on the line now. What's up, Jack?
Wow, that's very nice, Aaron.
You like that title? You want to update the resume, the LinkedIn profile, Jack?
Well, I'll tell you what, if they want to give me the salary of that GM title, I'll take it. Fun night last night for the draft, and now the bigger stuff will start happening, late next week with free agency, and then things settle down after that. So it's always a fun time of year.
So let's start with the draft, and we'll get to the Raptors selection and what you make of it in just a second. But how surprised were you to see the moving and shaking at the top of the draft? Nobody saw, very few people anyway, saw Banchero going number one to Orlando. It was presumed that Jabari Smith was the pick all along, and there was switcheroo at the top in the last half an hour or so. What was your reaction to that, Jack?
Well, the first thing is, when you look at Oklahoma City, Houston, and obviously the first pick, Orlando, all of them are a good ways away. And, what you're trying to do is truly, it's a term used way too often, but who's that best guy on the board? And I just think they felt Banchero had the most upside. And I think there's a little bit of concern about Holmgren in terms of his size and, he's long, but how strong he's going to be, how he'll hold up. I love his game. And then, I just think it came down to a comparison between a Jabari Smith and Banchero. And quite frankly, Smith went to not only two, but he went to three. So that says something, too, in terms of how people are looking at, the upside and what they think a guy's ceiling is. And your job isn't to look at a guy now and say who he is at this moment. You're trying to project 3, 5, 7 years out and say, what's this guy potentially going to look like? And it's having that eye for talent, that ability to project, and the ability also to say, what do we have within our organization, coaching style, developmental philosophy, and what's the best fit? And I think a lot of those decisions are made not only at the top, but at every pick.
Well, Jack, the Raptors didn't have a first-round pick because they moved it early in the season to part ways with Goran Dragic. So they sat with the 33rd pick. And with the 33rd pick, let's listen to who the Raptors selected.
With the 33rd pick in the 2022 NBA Draft, the Toronto Raptors select Christian Koloko from Douala, Cameroon, and the University of Arizona.
Jack, tell us what you know about Christian Koloko. It's a nice, it's a nice sort of fit with Douala, Cameroon, where Pascal Siakam is from. But the 7'1" shot-blocking center, tell us what the Raptors got in him.
Well, first of all, you're looking at University of Arizona. They had a heck of a year this past year, and he was a big part of it. He's developed in his time there and gotten better and better. He's a guy that you could throw the ball at the rim, and he'll go dunk it. He's a rim runner. He's mobile. He's a good shot blocker, rim protector. And a guy that is, when you start projecting and you look at him now, obviously he's been Defensive Player of the Year in the Pac-12. His improvement has been significant year in, year out. He's very efficient around the basket. And to me, is he a guy that's a big, strong, play with physicality guy, or is he going to outrun you? score at the rim, protect, and be a guy that gives you some real good mobility and defensive flexibility. I think he's more of that. So he is more of what the modern-day NBA game is in terms of you're not putting a guy on the block with his back to the basket and say, go do it. He'll find his opportunities in other ways. And I'm kind of intrigued by where he could end up being in a few years. The Raptors do a great job with using the Raptors 905 in terms of development tool. And I think you could see him this upcoming season kind of bounce a little bit between both, depending on how, roster scenarios play out with injuries and all that. But I'm sure he's going to get a big-time dose of game activity, which is what he needs to continue to develop. But I'm excited about it. I like the pick. I think it makes sense for them. You'll always see certain draft boards that'll say, hey, you reach a little bit here and there. But I think how you have a guy drafted on your board is what matters, not what other people think.
Our guest is Jack Armstrong from the NBA on TSN. And we'll ask you this question, Jack, because Bobby Webster will not answer it. I can guarantee you that. There were some trade rumors surrounding OG Anunoby leading up to the draft. It was Chris Haynes who reported that the number 7 pick that was ultimately used on, I believe, Shaedon Sharpe, correct? The Canadian from London, University of Kentucky. And that was in the mix for a potential deal for OG Anunoby. What have you heard about how legitimate that rumor was? And do you think the Raptors ever contemplated moving OG before the draft last night?
You never know what's legitimate. I mean, and who's putting it out? That's the most important thing. What's the agenda of the people putting it out? I just know one thing. I like the trajectory that OG Anunoby is on, has been on. And if he can stay healthy, and that's the biggest preface that involved with him, if he can stay healthy. I mean, they need him. I said this at the end of the year last season. If you could get close to 70 games out of him, I think you have a much better sense of where he's at. I think you'll see even better things out of him. I like where he's going as a player. I think he's a great fit for their team and how they like to play. He's really smart. Plays the game hard and the right way on both ends, and he's a product of what you've tried to do as an organization. You've invested a lot in him, so to consider moving him, it's got to be for the right price. It's got to be for the right situation because this is you could say, well, 7th pick, this, that, the other thing. That pick's going to take a while. You're in a different phase. You're not Sacramento or, Orlando, one of these teams that are selling hope. I mean, the Raptors have been in the playoffs, what is it, 8 of the last 9 years? They've won a championship in that stretch. I like where they're positioned right now. I mean, they were the 5th seed in the East last year. And to me, when you start talking about trading an OG Anunoby, you want to make sure that makes sense in the big picture in terms of what you're trying to do in terms of team building, because you want to, one, be a playoff team next year, a winning team, and continue to build. I like the foundation they're laying right now, and OG's part of that. And if he's not going to be part of it, then the reason he wouldn't be part of it is because you think he's probably the best way to help you get to another gear, another level, and utilizing him as a trade chip. So to me, I people get all worked up over it. I'm perfectly happy with OG Anunoby. I love his game. He's a good young man. And if he's with the Raptors, that's awesome. And if they feel like that they can turn him into a chip that helps their organization take another step, then that makes sense too. But at this point in time, why wouldn't the other 29 teams look at him and say, you know what, I'm intrigued by him. He deserves to be a guy that teams are intrigued by, because I think he not only helps the Raptors be successful and where they are right now, but he would help any team do the same thing.
Jack, it was a pretty remarkable night for Canada basketball yesterday as well. We saw four Canadians get taken in the draft. I believe that's the fourth year where four Canadians or more were taken in the NBA draft. In particular, two guys in the first round with Benedict Mathurin to Indiana and Shaedon Sharpe, like AK mentioned, to Portland. How awesome is this to see the growth of Canadian basketball start to really make its mark in the NBA?
You know, it's funny you were saying, I was thinking about it last night because the last time that happened, four or more, was 2019, right after the Raptors won the title. And I remember being in Brooklyn to do the draft. And just everyone was exhausted. We were running on fumes at that point because the whole, just the intensity of the playoff run and winning a title and then going to New York for a draft. And it was just a great night. You know, the afterglow, the excitement of the Raptors winning a title and then the celebration of the growth of the sport. And again, you see it last night. I just think it's marvelous. I think it just speaks volumes about where the game is and where it's come from and where it could potentially go. You know, and you mentioned it's the fourth time it's happened. And, you know, the only other country in that category is the United States, you know. And Canada is number two in the world in representation right now in the NBA. Behind the U.S. So to me, I think it things are positioned in a really nice way. You see the success of not only the younger teams, but the ladies teams as well. And now you hope that the Olympic team, the senior team can have that same kind of success as these guys mature and go through the program and represent Canada. So I just think it's great. And, you know, a big part of it, you know, you look back, the NBA coming to Canada when the Vancouver Grizzlies and Toronto Raptors came, and to see, you know, where basketball is now, you know, what is it, 27 years now, the NBA's been in Canada. And, wow, I just think the best is yet to come. It's great.
I really just credit the rise of Canadian basketball to bonjour and get that garbage out of here. Really,
you,
that's just really, it's just really,
you.
That's the answer. Jack, thanks so much for doing this. Have a great weekend, my friend. I'm sure we'll talk to you before NBA free agency kicks off next week.
That's right. You had me on first, and now you got Bobby Webster in a few minutes. So
you're eighth inning guy, Bobby Webster,
yeah,
Rivera.
I'm the warm-up act, you know, and then you go prime time. Your ratings will go through the roof in a few minutes. But I'm glad to do a little warm-up for you. So I hope I pass the audition.
Always, the best, needless to you're say. Thank you, Jack. That's Jack Armstrong from the NBA on TSN. Again, Bobby Webster, the general manager of the Raps, will join us in 15 minutes' time. James Duthie at 9 o'clock. And Connor McGahee, you may not know the name, but you've heard his voice on this radio station. He is the play-by-play voice of the Colorado Avalanche with some of the great calls of this playoff run. He's been fantastic. Really looking forward to chatting with him ahead of Game 5 tonight with the Avs looking to close out the Tampa Bay Lightning and win the Stanley Cup. Bobby Webster in 15 minutes. First Up continues. This is TSN 1050.
TSN 1050. Listen anywhere. Stream your favorite shows in your car. Available on Apple CarPlay via the iHeartRadio app. TSN 1050. Everywhere you want it. Now back to First Up with Karolnik and Koliakovo on TSN 1050.
You ain't first, you're last.
First Up rolls on. TSN 1050, Karolnik and Koliakovo with you. Bobby Webster, the GM of the Raps, in about 12 minutes' time. We'll talk about the selection of Christian Koloko, number 33 overall last night, with the team's his first and only selection. And look ahead to the offseason. Raps have a number of decisions to make and with regards to free agency, with regards to a number of things. So looking forward to chatting with Bobby as always. Some news surrounding the European Tour, who have banned those who participated in the, I guess, first Live Golf Series event last week or 2 weeks ago for three upcoming tournaments and fine them $120,000. I guess my question is, like, why would you pay the fine if you're one of these guys leaving the European Tour, right? I mean, like, I'm not giving you $120,000. I'm just not going to play on the European Tour. If you finish in last place in the Live Golf
Tour,
well,
I was just going to say
you make $125,000. I'm not paying any fines.
They're basically fining them the participation fee for playing in the Live Golf Tournament.
That's right, or to finish last, yeah. Participation
fee. It's like, well, if you're playing in the Live Golf Tour and you want to come back and play in the European Tour and play in the next three events, it's going to cost you what it costs you or what you made playing in the Live. So
yeah. No, it's that's a tough one. I don't really know how they hold up and how this even holds up in court. It would be another question I would have about
you,
this.
You know what bothers me about this? Because it's a conversation that's even dominating, you know, my group chats at the golf course. Right? Everybody's talking about it. I'm really sick and tired of the people trying to justify why what Liv did was so wrong. They've got a bankroll to legitimize themselves as much as they want. So how are you going to sit here and say that what the guys did to cross the line to go to it is bad, and those guys should be treated differently, and those guys should be shamed and stuff like that? Like, it's money we're talking about here. Isn't that what people make decisions in their life for?
There's that, and you know the money aspect. It's not just money. It's where the money's coming from. But I also think for golf fans, it's about the fracturing of the sport, right? Like, guys on the European Tour, they're banned from the next three events. The PGA Tour, we know the sanctions that they put in. And the only time you're going to see the collective best fields in the world of golf are four times a year at majors. That's it. And perhaps, maybe not even, if the Masters decides to ban all those guys as well. So that's where kind of the consternation comes from the golf fan. It's like, oh, I want to see Bryson, and I want to see Koepka, and I want to see DJ, and who knows, Abraham Answer. You know, you got to check him out whenever he's playing. So I think that's where the concern would come more so than anything for me at this point. I'm kind of sick of the whole, oh, the Saudi money, it's terrible, whatever, yada, yada, yada. I get it. I understand it, but I'm kind of past that part. I think for me as a huge golf fan, it's just disappointing that we're just not going to see the best players competing head-to-head against one another as much as we used to. That's unfortunate. At least for Rory McIlroy, it doesn't matter these days. He goes out and fires an 8-under-62 yesterday. This guy is on
dialed.
Fire.
He's dialed, fire. Man. He's and absolutely you look at, dialed.
You look at his last maybe 8-10 events. I mean, he's been in the top 10, I believe.
Just look at his last 2 months of golf. That's all you got to do.
He's been an unstoppable force.
If he's not winning, he's right very there. Much up there.
And
right?
He's the betting favorite to win the Open Championship at St. Andrews coming up in about 3 weeks' time, and rightfully so. I wouldn't be betting against Rory McIlroy right now. Of course, he's had a ton of success at in the past, and he's won an Open Championship back in 2014. So, yeah, I think Rory is going to have a very good time there, and he's probably going to win. Or he'll be right there at the Travelers this week, too, where, yeah, he goes out and just puts on a show yesterday. I don't know if you saw that one. He was playing with Kevin Kisner and Webb Simpson. And there was a shot of their tee balls on one hole. And the Kiz had it out there like 270. And Webb was out there 270. Rory was like 370. Like a full Walmart between Rory and his playing partners. And if you're those guys, you're looking at each other like, oof, we really got to hit the weight room if we're going to be playing with Rory these days, eh?
Right. And I think like the uproar in golf is, you know, you talk about the PGA Tour and the European Tour. I think why these guys are so pissed off is because they actually feel threatened. You know, for the first time since their existence, they actually have a legitimate threat up against them. And what's that doing? It's forcing them to change their business model. Nobody wants to do that. And this is why they're acting pissed off about it. But yeah, I honestly believe that regardless of what people think of the LIV Tour, I'm talking about golf in general. If you're a PGA golfer, don't you want this sort of pressure put on your organization so that there's more chances for you to create a better living? I mean, look what the PGA Tour just did a couple days ago. They all of a sudden they found $50 million.
It's like, oh, who knew? It's underneath our pillows.
Hey, you know there what? Here, you know what? We're going to do something to make the sport better. Here's an extra $50 million we're going to put into our tournament. What do you think the guys in the PGA Tour are saying? Oh, awesome. Yes. More money for all of us. Hey, you know what? If you found $50 million this year, what if you find $100 million next year? Because more players are going to start to leave. That's the only thing I look at as a benefit for the PGA Tour and for its players, is that now it's going to start making it more lucrative for these guys to stay here. And that's ultimately what you want out of it. You can't control what other guys do when it comes to the LIV Tour. And you can't control what guys do when they decide to make a decision of a boatload of money that's thrown in front of them. Will this last? Who knows? Nobody knows if this thing will last, because at some point, you know, the oil runs dry, right? And is that something that could happen with the LIV Tour? I don't see it happening, but if it does, at least for the time that this was here, it allowed golf itself to make it more profitable for the players to play in it. Yeah. Don't you agree?
I mean, there's no doubt about that. I mean, it just what's the old saying? A rising tide lifts all boats, and financially in the world of golf, LIV Golf has really risen the tide.
All of a sudden, they found $50 million next year and say, yeah, here's an extra $50 million. Well, where was this $50 million last year or this year?
You think about the people who profit from the price of oil being as high as it is. And, you know, the country of Saudi Arabia is one of the top oil producers in the world. So if the price of gas continues to skyrocket,
right,
maybe, you know, it's like, hey, Rory, how's $1.5 billion sound? Like, we'll get that for you. And Rory's like, oh, all right. You know what? See you later, PGA Tour.
Damn it.
I would love to see McIlroy go or Justin Thomas go and just eat their work. It's never going to happen because they've established it too.
They're too ingrained.
They're too into it now. Those guys are the faces of the PGA Tour, and Jon Rahm as well. But yeah, I don't think we're going to see.
And good for them for doing it, because look at the money that they've increased in the tournaments in their next couple of years.
That's right. I didn't even mention Tiger's name, and I guess we'll see Tiger at St. Andrews as well at the Open, and you know, who knows what he's got left in the tank, but I don't know. It's going to be a fun term at the Open, because you're going to see again all the players coming together for the first time, I guess, in a couple weeks. Of course, the U.S. Open would be another example, and none of the LIV guys were really too high up in the leaderboards, but maybe Koepka can make a run at the Open coming up at St. Andrews in the middle of July. Coming up next, the general manager of the Toronto Raptors, it's Bobby Webster. He's on the way. We'll be right back with him on the other side.
Westbound on the QEW, approaching Mississauga Road. We've got a crash here, taking up the two left lanes, and it is causing some very heavy jam-ups at the moment. Right back almost to the 427. You may just want to stick to Lakeshore Road or Queensway as an alternate here to avoid these jam-ups. In town, McCowan and McNichol got a collision here, and Dundas east of University, we got a collision underway. It's the Canada Day event at Rona until July 6th. Find everything you need to celebrate with great deals on summer essentials. Visit them in-store or online at rona.ca. From the News Talk 10-10 Traffic Center, I'm with Lenny Stone with Outdoors.
Gameplay. Weekday afternoons from 2 till 4 on TSN 1050. We're going all in on the coverage. You can bet on it.
With the 33rd pick in the 2022 NBA Draft, the Toronto Raptors select Christian Koloko from Douala, Cameroon and the University of Arizona.
If you're a Toronto Raptors fan last night watching the draft, you had to wait all the way to pick number 33 for the team's first selection, and it was not necessarily a surprise. I mean, you're talking about the second round of the draft, so you don't know who's going to be there or who's going to be off the board, but University of Arizona big man Christian Koloko was the pick, and we've got the architect of the Toronto Raptors on the program now. It's the general manager, and it's Bobby Webster back on First Up. Hey, Bobby, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
It's always our pleasure to have you on, Bobby.
We should actually thank you for coming on. I mean, it was you and your team that initiated this whole interview, so we're very thankful for that.
Yeah, of course, of course. We're friends with Bobby. Bobby remembers our interaction before Game 5 of the 2019 NBA Finals. Remember, Bobby, our fist pump on the sidelines, and I think a lot of people credit your success to our interaction that night. I'm sure you'd agree.
Yeah, that was a huge part of it. I'm not sure we would have won without the fist bump.
Nice.
So, I did hear, you know, Kawhi
the rings in the mail, thing. Right? The rings in the mail.
That's right. We have the replica one still. We have the replica one. So let's talk about your selection last night, Christian Koloko. And you heard the University of Arizona, but you also heard Douala, Cameroon, which is where Pascal Siakam is from, which I think is an interesting wrinkle to the selection. How impactful was Pascal's association and familiarity with Koloko in making this decision, Bobby?
Yeah, it's a great story. Actually, I ran into Pascal on Wednesday here. I just asked him. I knew Christian was a kid we were looking at. And, you know, he said he knows him. I don't know if they're friends. I think probably more acquaintances. But, no, it's more credit to the kid. I think he's coming off Defensive Player of the Year in the Pac-12, obviously a top basketball conference. And so just his growth as a player, you know, not unlike Pascal, but I'm sure in many ways very different. But just a really steep ascent for the kid as, you know, I think he probably went from a barely used player as a freshman, you know, to one of the cogs on one of the top teams in all of college basketball.
Bobby, were you surprised that he was there at 33? Because according to some of your comments last night, your draft board had Koloko somewhere in the top 20 or 25 overall in the draft.
We're a little surprised, but I think, you know, historically, I think I said we've been in that range, that late 20, early 30s, and we know that, you know, not all draft boards are the same. So if we could get to, you know, 25 was probably a stretch, but right around there, if we could get to players we liked, historically, we knew those guys would be around in the 30s. So we kind of based a little bit on chance and luck from prior years. And I won't say if we had many other left in that group, but he was there, and we were comfortable with him from the start.
We're in conversation with Toronto Raptors general manager Bobby Webster here on First Up. And whenever it's draft night and if you're a supporter of the Toronto Raptors, it's especially intriguing because of all the remarkable success you guys have had, whether it's in the first round of the draft recently, the second round, undrafted guys. I think of Fred VanVleet, who comes to mind very quickly. Because of all the success and the great scouting department, amateur scouting department that you guys have, is there kind of more of an impetus for you guys to maybe stockpile a couple more picks? I know you, of course, moved down in the draft with the trade, moving down to 33 with your first-round pick, supposed to be number 20. But just considering all the success you guys had, is there kind of maybe a little bit more pressure to make sure you're picking each and every year?
Yeah, it's a good one. You know, we definitely put pressure on ourselves, but I think over the years made some fun out of it too. You know, I mean, this enables obviously our staff to travel over the world early in the year, so that's, you know, obviously interesting and you know, an exciting job to have. But then, you know, when we really buckle down and start to invite guys up to Toronto, we go to Chicago for the draft combine. I think, you know, the process of it we really embraced over the years, and I think having some success you know, obviously gives people motivation. But I think for us, it's just being able to see some of the stories you all have seen and we've all watched, whether it's Fred or OG or Pascal or even a Chris Boucher, to just have watched these kids scout them, bring them into our family, develop them, grow. Doesn't mean that we don't have some, you know, some not so great stories as well, but I think those success stories that we get to live with every day really, really motivate us.
Bobby, take us through what a night like last night looks like, you know, inside the war room for you guys. You know, you pick at 33. Are you guys actively, like, paying attention to what's going on around the league with some of the trades, some of the conversations that are being had, some of the rumors about player movement? Like, was there any discussion about potentially moving up into the draft, or were you guys just comfortable with whatever, you know, whatever position you guys were in?
I think all of those, you know, this season, or at least this year, this year's draft, were done earlier in the week. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I felt like we just had done more of our pre-work and there's more serious discussions then. I think I said last night, like for the first hour of the draft, you know, my phone didn't ring, Masai's phone didn't ring, the office phone didn't ring. So we're all there sitting looking at each other, like what's going on. But I really think most teams, and ourselves, we'd had those conversations early. But yeah, you know, you don't do all that work, and our scouts have been following these kids for 3-4 years. So, you know, surprise picks early in the draft, obviously number one, I think was going to go a different way and ends up with Paolo. So I think that part of it from a fan perspective and from a scouting perspective is fun to follow. And then, yeah, you know, we have 33, so we're not the coolest kid in class like last year with four. So nobody's banging down your door. I think maybe teams start texting me or calling me around 25, 26. What are you guys going to do at 33? But that's just, you know, the nature of this year's pick.
Well, Bobby, tell us the difference between the two. Last year, you guys hit a home run with Scotty Barnes picking in the lottery, and this year we don't know what your pick's going to be with Coloco yet, but you pick 33. Which one is harder as a GM and as a scouting guy? Is it harder picking in the lottery with the guy that you're going to pick, or is it harder picking at 33 with the guy that you're going to pick?
I think it's got to be at four. You know, the microscope, you know, the magnifying glasses is on the organization, is on, you know, that decision, you know, very publicly. I think behind the scenes, obviously, we put a lot of pressure on ourselves. So I'd say four. I'd say 33, there's a bit more of, let's hope one of our guys is still there, whereas at four, you're kind of attacking the pick and making sure that who you're selecting is who you want, and you're not, you know, necessarily taking who's there. So, yeah, I would say four.
We're in conversation with Toronto Raptors GM Bobby Webster here on First Up. And with the draft now in the rear view, I'm sure you guys are looking ahead to free agency next week. You've got a couple of free agents that I have heard you say you'd like to retain, Chris Boucher and Thaddeus Young. What's the latest on their statuses with regards to their futures in Toronto, Bobby?
Yeah, same. You know, can't say much until I think July 1, but would love to have them back. I think the feeling's mutual, so hopefully we can, you know, continue those conversations at the appropriate time. And then we have a mid-level exception, which is about $10-11 million that we're able to go out and spend. So I think, you know, looking to add to the current group, obviously getting a kid like Christian, we feel like is adding, and then being able to add one or two guys in free agency, I think, you know, builds off the core from last year and the success we saw in the second half of the year. You know, we were just talking to a couple of our players this week when they're in Toronto, and I think they all felt like, you know, they didn't necessarily know exactly how to play with each other early on in the year. There's a lot of new faces, a lot of young players. So can they kind of come together quickly over the course of the summer? I think people have seen we've had Pascal up here, OG, Gary, Scotty. So there's been a lot of investment, I think, in each other and in the team as they look forward to next season.
Bobby, the team made great strides last year, probably accelerating the rebuild maybe you guys want to call it a retool in this organization. And it really presents a big offseason for you guys. And you guys have had a great track record so far of making some very impactful trades to this team. Where can you guys see yourself being more aggressive, in the free agent market or in the trade market in the offseason?
You know, the nature of it is the trades, and to your point, we've always, you know, kind of kept all our options open as we look at the summer. Free agency, we're a little bit limited, just bringing our own guys back and having that $10 million exception. But as people start to saw last night, you know, some teams are already starting to look towards free agency with some of their moves and setting up cap space and setting up, you know, the chase of a certain free agent. So we'll keep tabs on that. We do have a week here, starts on July 1st. But the trade market's always one that can kind of, you know, significantly alter, you know, your plans.
Bobby, thank you for doing this. It's great to have you back on the show, and we'll let you get back to work. You guys have a lot of stuff cooking, I'm sure, heading into July 1. So again, thanks for this and enjoy the weekend.
Same to you. Look forward to seeing you guys in person.
Can't wait, buddy. We'll be giving fist bumps.
Oh, you know it. We'll be the catalyst
with,
for that.
With our replica rings and his real ring.
That's right. That's right. That's Bobby Webster. The
See you, Bobby.
That's Bobby Webster, the GM of the Toronto Raptors. Yeah, I mean, I thought your question about what it's like drafting number four or number 33 was really interesting, because you would think that, you know, at number four, it was basically, you think back to last year, they were deciding between Jalen Suggs and Scotty Barnes. And I don't really know, like how could that be more difficult than at 33? You have 32 picks coming up before you. You have no idea who's going to be available there. at number four, you have a pretty crystal clear idea who's going to be available for you. So,
well, you do, but
Bobby said that.
I think there's also more pressure to hit on it, right?
For sure.
I mean,
for sure.
I think me and you can be the first to admit that we were both surprised they took Scotty Barnes when Jalen Suggs was available, considering Kyle Lowry was departing this team, and you had a guy to come in and fit in that position right away, and he had a better reputation of being, or stronger reputation of being a better shooter. And I think I'll speak on behalf of you, too. We were completely wrong about that. They hit a home run with Scotty Barnes.
Oh, grand slam, so, grand slam, however, twice, kids aside.
Right. Cycle, however you want to describe the impact that move had. But, you know, 33, there's probably not that much pressure. And if you do hit on, you know, end up hitting on a guy like that, I mean, Nikola Jokic was drafted 41st overall. Yeah. And the pick before that, the Toronto Raptors had the 40th pick. So
who was that selection at number 40?
I don't remember his name, but I'll do a quick research if you want.
Rod's looking it up. He'll let us know in a second. But, yeah, I'm sure that's a tough spot. It's like, oh, I went in the pick before Nikola Jokic, the back-to-back NBA MVP. So that's the beauty of the draft, man. Wait, like, and you're right with Scotty Barnes versus Jalen Suggs. Like, for Orlando, and remember the fans, how happy they were. Like, you saw the close-ups of the Magic fans, and like, yeah, we got Suggs, because that's what the media, that's what ESPN was saying, that Suggs was the better player, and that the Raptors would be foolish to pass on Jalen Suggs for Scotty Barnes. But it turns out that, and listen, I'm not trying to you know, hate on Jalen Suggs at all, but I mean, Scotty Barnes is a better player, and probably will be a better player, and I guess we'll see how it goes ultimately in the long run. But
so the Raptors, I want to correct myself, the Raptors had the 37th pick that year. And this was in, I don't remember the draft year it was, but they drafted DeAndre Daniels.
Oh.
And then four picks later, Nikola Jokic. 2014 was the draft.
Yeah, 2013, 2014. So
yeah.
There you go. There you go. And there's so many situations like that, not only in basketball, I mean, in hockey and football. Like Tom Brady, you know, like... You know, it wasn't a first round pick. There you go. Yeah. So it's funny how things can go. And who knows? Maybe Christian.
But you gotta like the upside with Koloko, right?
Sure. Well, here's the thing: the Raptors could draft me, and I would think it'd be a good pick because it's the Raptors, and they make smart decisions. Okay, drafting me might be a stretch. I do have a pretty good.
I've got better basketball skills than you. I mean, yeah, I'm an elite layupper, man.
Yeah, maybe 3 years
ago. To Ja Mamalalela. By the way, Ja Mamalalela, we don't even talk about him, got his ring with the Warriors.
NBA champion. Ja Mamalalela, assistant coach, your former coach with Raptors 905. So congratulations to him. And again, thanks to Bobby Webster and the Toronto Raptors for coming on the program this morning. That was a lot of fun. It's always fun welcoming James Duthie. He'll join us in 15 minutes. Sorry, what were you saying?
I said I still remember like when we did the Raptors 905 and we were like, oh, I'll try out for anything. And I had like curling teams reach out to me. I had lacrosse teams reach out to me, come to our tryouts and stuff like that. And I was like, wow, this is pretty overwhelming right now. I just want to enjoy retirement.
Yeah. I mean, you were just fresh off of playing hockey, too. You had kind of the bum shoulder a little bit at the time, too.
Bad knee, bum shoulder. Still here. Still here.
Did not affect your
That's why
jump
golf
shot.
Is the perfect sport for me, man.
Yeah, I know.
Ride in a cart, swing a club.
Dude, there's a reason that, you know, 90-year-olds play golf and no 90-year-olds playing basketball, you know?
No
like,
kidding.
It's just, or maybe I'm sure there's some out there playing basketball, but not as frequently. I think that's fair to say. Mm-hmm. James Duthie played 54 holes of golf earlier this week. We got to ask him about that and how he's feeling today. I think it was a couple of days ago. I'm sure he's still
3 days ago.
Bit. Yeah, I'm sure James has not gotten out of bed, would be my guess.
Well, he did ask me if I wanted to play in it, and I'm like, no, there's no way I can do 54 holes in one day. No chance.
I mean, I'm with you. We'll see how.
Could you imagine doing a morning show from 6 to 10 and then going and golfing 54 holes?
No, I don't think that would be possible. You'd have to play at like 7 a.m. You'd have to start really, really early in order to get it all in.
Well, 4-hour rounds times 3, that's 12 hours. So
could be a little slower. Also, you stop for lunch and, you know.
Yeah,
it's
I guess.
50,
yeah,
16
it's,
hour day.
You're right. It is a 7 o'clock. It is a 7 o'clock first tee time, for sure.
So,
it has to be.
We'll find out how JD's feeling, and we'll also find out how JD's feeling about the Tampa Bay Lightning and their chances of storming back at least for one night, and taking out Colorado, who have a chance to win the Cup at home later this evening. That's on the way. Also, speaking of Colorado, Connor McGahey, the play-by-play voice of the Avs, he'll join us at 9:30, and this guy's been magnificent for years and has taken his game to a new level during these Stanley Cup playoffs. That's all on the way. As First Up continues on this Friday morning, you're listening to TSN Radio.
Gorgeous Friday ahead, both weather-wise and on First Up. James Duthie will join us in about 10 minutes' time, and Connor McGahey, the voice of the Colorado Avalanche, at 9:30.
We haven't talked much about the Kyrie Irving reports coming from Woj last night on ESPN Coco, where we know that Kyrie has a player option due on June 29th that, in theory, he could decline and become a unrestricted free agent, go sign with whoever he wants. He could go sign with the Toronto Raptors. Bobby Webster said that the Raps have a $10 million a player exemption. Cap exemption. So maybe, you know, Kyrie wants to make his way. I don't know how that would work with the vaccine thing. Do we still have that here? I don't know. But in any case, I don't think that's overly likely. There have been reports that Kyrie would at least be interested in perhaps considering the Lakers, the Clippers, the Knicks, the Heat, the Philadelphia 76ers, and my personal favorite idea, the Dallas Mavericks. Kyrie and Luka. An interesting tandem right there, I think. And I think ultimately the most likely outcome is that Kyrie's back in Brooklyn. It's just financially leaving the $37 million on the table and going to take 7 or 8 from somebody else, or maybe 10. It doesn't make any sense. Maybe a sign and trade could be facilitated, but Kevin Durant sitting there is like, dude, you know, we're a team here. We came here together to win together. And if Brooklyn's looking at Kyrie and being like, oh, this guy is completely unreliable, you have no idea when he's going to show up. Forget the vaccine stuff. Just staying healthy has been an issue for him as well. It's quite the predicament the Nets find themselves in with Steve Nash, Sean Marks, and company, Coco.
I think I was hearing yesterday that in the 3 years that he's been with the Brooklyn Nets, he's missed over 140 games. And now this guy is talking about wanting a $200+ million contract. Go show your team you can play first before even thinking. And this is the nonsense that surrounds this. And, you know, I'm reading just Woj just being, by the way, how about the WrestleMania cage match that's going on between Woj and Sham Sharania right now, where these guys are literally seconds apart with every tweet that they break.
I'd love to know what goes on behind the scenes. Like, who's texting these guys? How do they tweet so fast?
And
It's wild. I would love a nice ESPN 30 for 30, Woj versus Shams. And they just talk about their lives and how they operate on a night like last night or ahead of free agency, which is coming up next week. That'd be very fascinating. That could be an idea, and I'm looking for a little bit of cash from ESPN if they decide to pull that off.
Right. Sign an NDA.
That's right.
Make sure that you own the rights to that. But both of them are saying that if Kyrie can't reach an agreement to stay with Brooklyn, he needs the Brooklyn Nets to help him facilitate a sign and trade.
If he wants to get paid, yes.
Do you think the Nets are going to sit here and say, oh, Kyrie, what do you want? We'll do it for you?
Seems
honestly
unlikely.
Okay, so I've been wanting to get into this all morning because this is what really sparked my anger around this situation. It was listening to Stephen A. Smith talk about this Kyrie situation.
You are actually sitting here, and you are so appalled that nobody would want to get, the Brooklyn Nets wouldn't want to guarantee you $250 million because they're afraid you're not going to show up to work. That you are literally sitting there and threatening them, I'll pass on this player option at $37 million, and I'll take $7 million, $30 million less just off of principle. Think about that for a second. How could you possibly feel good about that? Let him go. Let him go. Call his bluff. Call his bluff. You the Brooklyn Nets, go ahead. I double dare you. You a man of principle, right? That's what you're weighing about the money, right? You don't mind leaving KD hanging, right?
That's good. That's a good clip.
Isn't it?
That's a good clip. I'm not sure I actually agree, but...
What do you mean? What don't you agree with?
Well,
he points it out perfectly about everything Kyrie is trying to sabotage this team with because he's selfishly thinking about himself again.
Again, this is not something that has actually transpired yet. This is posturing. This is a negotiation. This is maneuvering. We'll see how it actually plays out on June 29th before you start calling it a sabotage. That being said... When Stephen A. saying, call his bluff, all right, sure, you do that, and then he gets up and leaves.
Good.
Then all of a sudden,
see ya.
Well, no, that's not good at all.
Why?
All of a sudden, you have Kevin Durant at age 34.
Kevin Durant played almost the full season without Kyrie Irving last year. What's the difference another year?
Well, I mean, there's a big difference. They don't have Kyrie Irving, and Kyrie Irving was playing in the playoffs, and the vaccine situation is not a problem. Yeah, dude, Kyrie Irving is not some scrub. He averaged almost 28 points a game last year. He's a superstar. So you don't want to let Kyrie Irving walk for nothing. So calling his bluff is a dangerous proposition.
And is it? Kevin Durant. Okay, but here's the thing. Why is it a dangerous proposition when this guy's looking for a $200+ million contract, and if he opts out of his contract, the most he can get anywhere is seven? How is that a dangerous proposition?
Well, it's a dangerous proposition because Kyrie Irving's a crazy person.
Wow.
He's completely unpredictable. And do I believe he's going to pass up $30 million? Of course not. That is nuts. But if there's anyone who would do it, it is Kyrie Irving. I think Brooklyn knows exactly that.
This guy drives me nuts, man.
Well, it is.
Drives me nuts.
It's fascinating because you're right. The injuries, all the off-the-court stuff, no doubt. But when Kyrie Irving's healthy and playing, dude's incredible at basketball.
When he wants to play.
Well, that's it. And the only chance, I mean, Brooklyn, if Brooklyn goes in the next season with Durant and Ben Simmons as their top two players, like, kiss your title hopes goodbye. But if you've got Kyrie, you got Durant, you got Simmons, maybe he's back to his 2019 form, absolutely you're a contender in the Eastern Conference. So it's a fascinating situation, and this weekend I'm sure there'll be a lot of stuff on Kyrie and the Nets, no doubt about that. Maybe we'll ask James Duthie his thoughts on that. Probably not, but I'm sure he has a lot of thoughts. He is the former host of NBA in the Paint in the late 1990s here on TSN. And we'll talk about the 54 holes and the cup final tonight with JD when he joins us on the other side here on First Up. This hour of First Up, powered by Manscaped.